Hi, and welcome to Strangers on the Internet, a podcast about making online dating work for you. My name is Irina Manta, and I'm a professor at the Maurice A. Dean School of Law at Hofstra University. I'm also a dating coach and a consultant for the dating app industry.
And I am Michelle Lang, a senior lecturer in psychology at Christopher Newport University in Virginia, and a clinical psychologist in private practice. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and not our employers.
We have with us today a very special couple that met online and lives in Tennessee with their two children and lots of fun pets, Michelle Merritt and Paul Hebing. We have the pleasure to have with us today a couple that hails from the southern United States, Michelle Merritt and Paul Hebing. While they live in Tennessee with their kids, dogs, and cats, Michelle is an associate professor in the philosophy department at Arkansas State University. Her specialties are philosophy of mind and especially cognitive science, as well as feminist philosophy. Among her degrees are a PhD in philosophy and an MA in applied linguistics, both from the University of South Florida. In 2021, she published a book called Minding Dogs, Humans, Canine Companions, and a New Philosophy of Cognitive Science, which you can find in our show notes. Michelle also studies and writes critically about adoption, and she herself did not know her biological family for the first 39 years of her life. Michelle is also an avid triathlete. Her husband, Paul Hebing, is the director of technology design at eXp. He got his BS in electrical and electronics engineering from the Milwaukee School of Engineering. He's an award-winning home brewer who hasn't had a chance to brew in years because of his kids with Michelle. Michelle and Paul, welcome. Why don't you tell our listeners a bit about your online dating journey and how you eventually found each other?
Okay, I guess I'll go first since I am the one who started it by reaching out to Paul on the dating app OkCupid, which I'm not even sure exists anymore. I don't keep up with these things. They have an algorithm on there that kind of matches you and gives you a percentage of how well you are matched with somebody. And he came up as, I believe, 98%. Which was the highest of all my matches. I will say, in all honesty, when I was looking, I was at a visiting professorship job in Orlando where he lived at the time and was trying to find somebody to hang out with that didn't involve going to a bar to meet somebody. I didn't think that was the best way to do it. And I was more interested in the professors that popped up as my matches at first. So he was not the first person I reached out to, but I did eventually, and it was Super Bowl Sunday. And he was at a party, I guess, when this message hit his inbox. And I just said, hey, you look a little bit like Ben Folds, who happens to be my favorite singer, and just thought we should get to know each other. We have a pretty high match score. And then he responded, and we started to hang out.
Yes.
Paul, what did you think when you got this message?
Oh, what did I think? Well, I was a little intimidated that a PhD was reaching out to me. Because as she said, I was not the first person that she reached out to, but I'm pretty sure I'm the least educated with my piddly little bachelor's degree. So yeah, I was a little intimidated. Plus, you know, she's hot. So whenever a very attractive person reaches out to me, my immediate thought is, all right, what would you like me to buy from you? And so I wasn't entirely sure that she was truly interested in me, but...
Aww.
I jumped at the opportunity to hang out nonetheless.
So with that 98% match score, how well did that align with whoever suggested the first date? Like, what was the date that was suggested, and how did the other one respond to that date suggestion? How did the date go?
Well, the first thing to note is that it was not a date, because I will say when I reached out to him, I wasn't looking for somebody in particular to date, but was kind of just hoping to meet some people, and maybe they had friends and we'd all just hang out and somebody organically would just start dating somebody else. So it was not a date. And he also understood that it was not a date. We both understood this and we met up, yeah, to have a drink. Yeah. And I can't, now I'm totally blanking on the name of the bar. This is sad. I just remember I had pear cider and I, knowing it wasn't a date, having a couple ciders and me got up to use the bathroom and just remember kind of giggling in the bathroom, looking in the mirror, thinking like, I actually like this guy. Like, this is turning out to be a date, but it's not supposed to be a date. So, yeah.
Was it you that suggested the bar?
I suggested the bar because she was new to the Orlando area. I had been living there for about 10 years, and I also, in my spare time, was doing freelance writing for the Orlando Sentinel and the Orlando Weekly. So, by virtue of going out and reviewing a lot of bars and restaurants, I became very familiar with the ones that were available and approximate locations between her and me. So I suggested that we go out to a place called Red Light, Red Light, which was a good sort of middle driving distance from where we were living at the time. And also they have an incredible selection at that particular bar. And we had to schedule it around her work schedule as she was teaching at University of Central Florida at the time. And yeah, we went out and met. And yes, I understood that this was not a date. She was just looking to become more familiar with the Orlando area. And I was happy to help and maybe get a new friend in the process. And believe it or not, yes, I did actually think that this was just going to be a friendship and not a deeper or more intimate relationship.
That's so nice because you always hear about these guys complaining that they've been friend zoned, right? As if it's like this horrible thing that, oh no, now you're just friends with a woman when all you were really interested in was a romantic or sexual relationship. And you're like, no, actually, that sounds pretty nice to make a new friend. So how quickly did things move on from that to, no, actually, we're going to date and then it's gonna get
So
serious.
after that drinks out, the next opportunity to meet up happened when I had to go to a local restaurant that had a sweet shop, and as part of a review, do a review of their offerings at this sweet shop. And I was usually given a stipend of $30 or $40 or something, which usually meant way too much food for me to eat on my own. So I like to bring friends or other people to help eat my way through the menu. And so I asked her if I know that she works out all the time, but does she want to have some cupcakes with me at this sweet shop, indulge a little bit? And obviously she would never indulge in sweets, being as into fitness as she is. That is a joke. She so yeah, we went out and had some cupcakes, including one that I think you thought was rather questionable.
Yeah, it had potato chips on it, I believe. Yeah. But Paul found out at that moment that I really am only interested in the icing anyways. So I believe he ate most of the cake part for me and just ate the icing.
Was that just an early date or was that the second date? I'm curious because my second date with my boyfriend was also getting cupcakes out.
This was the se I mean, it was the second time we met up. It wasn't, the first
Yeah,
one wasn't a
well, the
date,
second
so
time.
this was yeah. And then we
Yeah,
didn't want the date
cupcakes.
to end, I guess, and decided to go to another well-known established bar in Orlando that's no longer there, Tom and Jerry's.
Yes,
He's
Tom and
better at
Jerry's,
remembering
which
the
is,
names of things.
yes, it is now a parking
Yeah.
lot.
Yeah. And so that just turned into a long night of us talking and realizing that we really liked each other. And then I invited him back to my place. So, and he actually was kind of reluctant because he thought, I don't know, I feel like this is maybe moving in too quick of a direction, and I insisted. So
You
that's
know,
about how fast that went.
we've talked before several times on this show. It's come up of like what are good ideas or maybe not great ideas for early dates, and we've also just seen in different social media groups we belong to, people have strong opinions about these things. Irina and I both tend to be of the mentality of like a low stakes early date, like going out to a bar or for coffee or for cupcakes, are a great idea because if it's not working, you can get out of it early. But like what you guys did, if it is working, nothing to say you can't extend the date and go on to move into, okay, now let's take this date to part two or part three, as may have been the case. And so both of us are fans of that. We tend to continue to cheer on our listeners to consider this philosophy, which seems to have worked out so nicely for the two of you.
Yeah.
So what point did it get to, okay, Now, this started in Florida. Now you're in Tennessee. At some point, this must have gotten serious enough to discuss a move. Was that before or after marriage? What was that like? Really deciding to take some of those next serious steps?
Well, so this was February. This was almost exactly 12 years ago that this was all going down because it was Super Bowl. And I had been at UCF for a year almost. And I was still on the market because this was a visiting assistant professorship. And the market is terrible for academic philosophers, for everybody, but philosophy may be up there
Yes,
among
she
the
meant
worst.
on the market for her job, not on the market dating, because
Important
Yes. Sorry, I
clarification.
Yes, thank you. I always forget.
We know. We know.
I'm sorry, Paul. I'm talking
We live in that world
to
too.
other academics. I forget. So, yeah, and I don't think I really properly explained all this to Paul in the early stages of dating because I wasn't really thinking that far down the road, and also was pretty much assuming that I wasn't going to get a job because it's the doom and gloom of academia. And then I got an interview request at Arkansas State. Did that and still assumed I'm sure I blew the interview because I'm awkward as hell and there's no way. And so then I got the job offer and it was, gosh, I mean, that was probably in March. So we'd only been dating like a month and a half maybe, but it had gotten pretty serious pretty fast. I think we both really were like in love at this point. And I had made sure that one of his other girlfriends that he was sort of seeing on the side had gotten the boot. That's another fun story.
Well, we
Maybe
got
not for
the
this
time.
show.
Let's hear how
Yeah,
that happened.
we're here for it.
Yeah, if Paul, you want to explain?
What? What? I mean, I was
What happened to her? Is she still
oh,
alive?
she is still alive, yes, and
Takes terribly dark turn. Okay.
yes, no, but no, I was seeing somebody that I had seen several years prior. We had reconnected and we thought, oh, let's try it again. But in the meantime, both she and I were also, because we were separate by distance, she was in Illinois, I was in Florida. We were still looking around to seeing other people. And yes, I met Michelle and I realized. Okay, Michelle is the obvious upgrade and
Are
the
you?
better match for me, yes. So yeah, I think I need to, and then I had to do the what the thing that most people really are hesitant to do and end that relationship because yeah, I had found Michelle and I was pretty confident that she was the person I wanted to continue having a relationship and I also realized at that point too that Michelle had shown me a level of person that I wanted to be with, to augment, accent my life with, improve my life with. And even if I were no longer in a relationship with Michelle, it showed to me how shallow the relationship I had with this other woman was. And it just became obvious to me that I was chasing the wrong aspects. I was going after the wrong kind of person with this other woman. So
Yeah, new levels
realizing
unlocked.
that actually made it easier to go ahead and end that relationship.
It also sounds like you guys had maybe open communication around this. So, Michelle, you knew of this other woman, so you were like involved in this idea of, okay, like we should go ahead and make this official between the two of us. And how do you feel about calling up that other woman and ending things with her? Was that a conversation you had?
That was a conversation we had, but not because of those reasons. So I tend to be pretty good at internet sleuthing. As Irina mentioned, I'm an adopted person, and I've learned that adopted people are like, we will find dirt on anyone. So we've had our identities kept from us our whole lives. So, there's that whole aspect to it. So, anyways, I did my own little detective work because this is like this rando that I met online still. I mean, yes, I've already brought him to my house, so I guess I'm maybe going out of order here, looking him up in the weeks that followed and found this woman that I kept seeing in pictures in his Facebook. And I remember being out for drinks with some friends one night and like showing it to a friend of mine saying, "What do you think about this?" And my friend said, "Oh, I'm pretty sure that's just a lesbian." I don't know why she thought that. And then I said, "But what about this picture?" And they were kissing. And I thought, I don't know. I don't think so. And so, yeah, I confronted Paul about this. I'm like, when were you going to tell me about this person that you're obviously seeing in addition to me? And basically, I came to find out it was an open relationship. I wasn't informed. To be fair, I wasn't assuming we were in a closed relationship either. So that was when we kind of had the like, okay, what are we doing here? It's either her or me kind of thing, because I don't want to be in this triad situation with this person. And yeah, so he called it off with her. That did not go very well with her, by the way, because I think she might have thought that their relationship was a little more serious than he let on. And so there was a little bit of drama that ensued afterwards,
Well,
but
again, I please don't make it seem like I was misinforming her or even you. I was not outright lying. I was coming to the realization that it was you that, was changing what I thought about the relationship I wanted to have with another person. And, I was realizing what I felt about you and realizing how that changed how I felt about her. And yeah, it was just a it's hard to put into words, but yeah, it just it everything about what I wanted out of my life and out of relationships changed when I met you, and coming to that realization and accepting it, that took a couple of weeks. But then when you and I sat and talked about it, yeah, it became obvious. I need to pursue the relationship with you, end it with her, and let's see where things go from there.
and I
that's
will
something
say that
interesting.
one of the things that helped me kind of like see that I wasn't being like kind of lied to or kept the truth from is I beat people to the punch a lot, as Paul has discovered over the years. Like I just I get to the truth a little bit quicker maybe. So I think he was going to talk to me about this. I just confronted him about it first. And the reason I know that he was going to, this was his decision whether I had discovered this person or not, is that one of his friends told me that I guess they went out for drinks after one of our dates, Paul and his friend. And Paul was just racked with all this like anxiety and sort of saying, I really, this person I've met, I really like her, and I'm gonna have to get rid of so and so, I think. Like, what do I do? And his friend was like, okay, well, you know what you have to do. So that story always like sticks with me, is like, he wasn't lying to me, you know, I was just too quick.
Oh, and good friend too, because you don't know that friends always give the most upstanding advice in situations like that. You know, it's interesting hearing you guys talk about this too, because I already said the cupcake story reminds me of me and my boyfriend. Similarly, the discovering there's somebody else in the picture reminds me of that as well. And I think we both, similar to you guys, we were not exclusive with each other very early on. We had not had that conversation. And so I assumed we were both dating other people, but we had gone our I want to say third date or maybe right around there. We had just been having a great date and we were in the car together going to the next stop on this. And he was driving and he asked if I could pick up his phone and like see what time it was or something like that, something where I would just need to pick up his phone and see that. But I picked up his phone and I saw there was a text message from a girl. And, you know, I said, and I took it fine, you know, because we were new to dating. We had not had these conversations, but it was kind of an awkward moment because I also knew the next time he picked up his phone, he was going to see that anyway. So I just went ahead and called it out. I was like, hey, the time is whatever it is, or whatever else I was supposed to be looking at on there. I was like, but also, I noticed you have a message from this person. And I'm like, obviously, do whatever you need to do there. You know, this probably brings to mind a conversation we should have at some point, but just letting you know, I saw that, but it's fine. I didn't read your message or anything like that. And then it did lead to us talking about who she was. And it was actually, he said very similar to what you said, Paul. He was like, you know, that is somebody who I've seen on and off, but now that things are what they are with us and the direction I feel like it's heading, I will let her know that I'm not interested in continuing to check in with her. And I think with them, it had been so on and off that it had maybe been a little while since she had checked in. She just happened to that day. But yeah, it was that same kind of reasoning. And it led to this just nice, mature adult conversation between us about, yeah, like it's not like we were just out here on our own, not seeing other people before we discovered each other existed. And so we're out here figuring out our way, as you described, Paul. And when you meet somebody who it really hits kind of different. It changes things, and you've got to be able to adapt to that and to talk about it. So, you know, I think it's good that we're exploring this on the podcast, because I don't know that we've had these kind of conversations before in all of our episodes. And I know that's something that other couples must deal with. It's a challenging early days kind of moment to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This other woman I could talk about, you know, we liked a lot of the same movies or books or things like that, pop culture items, which is fun and all. But then I met Michelle, and we were talking about deeper things, smarter things, things that me as an engineer, she probably doesn't talk to too many engineers who want to, you know, discuss philosophy or, I mean, she could go into the deeper parts of the things that she teaches, but I was really enjoying that. And I also really appreciated that she, for lack of a better term, has her shit together and really knew what she wanted to do in the next 1 year, 5 years, and beyond. And I admired that, and I really appreciated that. And that was the kind of person that I wanted to attach myself to, because I felt like she could then help me want to chase after the things that I wanted to go after as well. If she was also propelling herself into the future, it felt more like somebody that I could try. Maybe I would have to keep up with her rather than the other way around. And I really liked that. And I realized that was the type of person I really wanted to be with.
So we still have to solve the mystery how we get to Tennessee from here. Okay. So you hadn't been together very long when this Arkansas state deal started coming together, Michelle. So what did you do?
Yeah, so back to that, after the other woman was expelled. I brought that up because it's just funny that I made this, you know, I staked my claim on Paul, and then I got this job offer. And I was like, bye, I'm going to go. I have this job. I mean, and there was really no choice to be made because it was the only offer I got. And, like, I had to go, and he knew that. So we kind of had this other discussion of like, well, then now what are we doing? Are we just going to like be like, you know, fuck buddies for the rest of the summer? And like, then I leave. And I think we kind of thought that maybe we should do that for a while, but it was just obvious that we didn't want just that. And we just sort of made plans to try the long distance thing, even though ironically, Paul had been doing that with this other person kind of sporadically, and it was not going well. So we, you know, I moved without him and got a small apartment up in Jonesboro. And so that first entire year of my first year with a tenure track job, I'm like flying down to Florida once a month. He's flying up there once a month. So we could see each other maybe like every 2 weeks. We tried holidays, things like that. At least with the professor gig, you have longer breaks for, you know, the holidays. So we did that. And then, yeah, then it was in March. He's probably going to know these dates better than I am. March that year, like the next year, the spring semester, that I was at a conference. Yeah, it was March because it was your birthday. That's right. I went to a conference in Kentucky to present, and he thought I was just going to like drive back to Arkansas and go home and miss his birthday because of the overlap there on his birthday is in March. And I had planned a whole surprise to fly down there to Orlando, and I had his friends in on it. And I was like, okay, I'm coming down. He doesn't know this. Somebody pick me up at the airport. We're going to make a big party for him, and he's not going to know. Well, one of his friends, the same friend that told him not to lose me and to keep me and get rid of the other girl, I think he was the one who leaked this info to Paul that I was coming. And it was because Paul was planning to propose to me and was going to meet me, he was going to come up and surprise me in Arkansas. So we had like both planned these surprises. And so he changed his plans and then met me at the airport. So when I get off the plane, I'm getting off this plane thinking I'm going to meet his friend Trevor, and he's going to take me to his house, and we're going to do the surprise party. And I should also note that I was fully drugged on like pain medication because I had a tooth problem. So I like stumble off the plane. I'm not at all expecting to see Paul there. And he's there with like all these rando airport people with signs and stuff. And like, it's a whole production of him proposing to me. So,
Oh,
yeah.
wow.
And I walked right past him. I didn't even like I
Again, I
actually
have
thought
done
that.
this to a boyfriend at the airport because if you don't expect them to be there, you're not looking for them. It doesn't compute in your head. This is
I had
related.
a whole row of people holding up signs that spelled out a sentence, a whole sentence.
She never
It
thought it
was.
was going to be for her, but this sounds amazing.
Nope.
I thought that there was somebody maybe on the
I
plane
love
that
it.
was famous and people were excited about it. I don't know. My brain was not. I was like, where's Trevor?
You were famous.
Yeah. And then he grabbed my hand and said, Michelle. And I just looked at him. I was like, what are you doing here? I was like really mad at him actually for like, how is this possible right now? And yeah. And then it hit me what was happening. So yes, his birthday party turned into an engagement party. So that was kind
Aww.
of fun.
What a cool
Yeah.
story. Well, yeah, after that, I guess you go where she's going.
Yeah. So it took until about September to fully get him moved up because he had to negotiate with his company to be able to work remotely. He still works at the company based in Orlando, so works from home. And yeah. And then we moved to Memphis, excuse me, after I got tenure because I felt more secure in my position and decided I could live a little farther away and have a little bit more of a city life, even though Memphis is nothing like New York, I'm sure. It's just getting out of Arkansas was good for us, I think. So, yeah.
Well, as Michelle knows, I've actually lived in Arkansas for a year, so the sort of on the other side in Little Rock. So I get it. But Paul, one question that I have for you is this: so I've known Michelle for a while on social media, and she's always praising you for being her rock. What are the ways in which you support her that some other men could maybe learn from?
I guess that's an interesting question because I sometimes think about that, especially when I look on social media and I hear stories of men being terrible to women and their partners. I'm just thinking, what is wrong with you? Why do you even think like this? Because I don't think Michelle owes me anything. I don't think that she's there to do anything in particular for me except to support me and love me. So, and she'll often teach me things that I am doing that make her not that stress her out or make her work harder. She'll often pull out the emotional labor card on me, which can be a little annoying, but she used to pull the emotional labor card on me so much that I got so aggravated by it that I just said fine, and I started being even more proactive about those particular things that she was calling me out on, and now I probably do more work than she does in some cases, but that's okay because I think that's how that should be. In a relationship, you improve yourself and you try to support your partner in ways that they're saying that you need to, and maybe you overcompensate. And I hope she tells me if I'm overcompensating or making it annoying for her. But I don't know. I think people should strive to make their partners happy and try in whatever way they can and not expect anything, not expect that they're going to do anything by default. Something that Michelle and I told each other early on, and it's still somewhat true, but when we first met, we said to each other, and this was not meant to be like mean or condescending, but I don't need you. And what we meant by that is we didn't need the other person to live and to live our lives. We could live our lives independently, but we wanted each other because we liked how we felt around each other. And to a large degree, it's still true. I mean, with kids in the mix, it makes we kind of do need each other a little bit more because it's the kids against us and it's like armies battling. So I kind of do need her. But yeah, I still, though, I'm my own person and she's her own person, but I still want her because I like her. She's my friend. And I want to be around her, and I also want my friend to be happy, like with all my friends. So I try what I can to make her happy and do nice things. If that makes me the rock, good.
Yeah, sounds like you listened in kindergarten when they taught us about the golden rule, and you're like, turns out you should just like generally treat people well, and especially if you care about them, act like it. So that's really great. Now, for either of you, Paul, when you talked about the emotional labor, Michelle pulling the emotional labor card, what kind of things might constitute this emotional labor, Michelle, that you were looking to see more from Paul, or Paul that you feel like you rose to the occasion with? Like, what are some examples of that emotional labor?
Well, I'll answer since that's kind of my accusation or my charge. I think it's one of those invisible things that a lot of women, if you know, kind of like you're around the house, you're full-time work, doing all this teaching and research scholarship, and also planning what the kids are going to be doing for their extracurricular activities, and also thinking about whose birthday is going to be when, and how we're going to get together with so and so, and this vacation that we want to plan, and we keep talking about. So we've lately been talking about it as like the spinning plates that I'm always holding up of like the stuff that nobody really sees like happening behind the scenes. And so I get frustrated with that because I think like that falls largely on women generally, but in our relationship too, it just happens to be that way. But one thing I've come to realize, I'll say over the years, is that I just like doing that stuff. I'm a control freak, and I really like to make, I want to make the plans because I have certain things I have to be able to do, and like little like kind of obsessive like things I have to make sure I can have going. And what helps me actually more is somebody to do the dishes because I hate doing the dishes. And like just make the kids lunches in the morning. Like this is the thing that Paul does. I just can't get up and do all that kind of stuff every morning because sometimes I'm just exhausted or depressed or something. And that stuff's actually really, I've come to realize that that might not seem like emotional labor because that's what most people would call just basic everyday physical chores around the house. But for me, that is emotional labor that I can't do sometimes. And so I don't think I levy that charge at you as much anymore because I realize like, I don't really want you to make the plans. excuse me, I want to choose what the kids are going to do for their extracurricular and activities and things. So, yeah, I mean, he's stepped up in a lot of ways over the years, but in some ways, I think I've also realized that maybe this is just the way our relationship works, is that it's never going to be perfectly equal. There's going to be unequal aspects to all the labor around a house, and this is just what works for us. So.
Michelle, you've been very open, including on social media, about your mental health struggles that you referenced here, including situations or moments in your life where you felt suicidal. How have you handled these things as part of your relationship with Paul or generally? Because I feel like a lot of our listeners have probably dealt with things like that and they don't feel comfortable talking about it. So I think they would really benefit from hearing from you.
Yeah, I'm kind of an open book about this stuff, as you know. And I wasn't always this way, but that's one thing I credit Paul with, is kind of empowering me to be able to speak about this stuff and not feel ashamed. And that, for a long time was just with him. And so I think that's another, if I could throw in some advice that Paul could give to other men that you asked the question earlier, is like, be that person for your partner. And this goes for anybody, but be a listener and somebody that you can sit with somebody in their pain. Because a lot of times when you're in pain, you don't want advice and you don't want somebody to tell you to go to therapy. In fact, that's like the last thing that I need to hear sometimes. And that's what he's always done for me. And so I think that just gave me the space to actually like have these feelings and know that they're not anything to be ashamed of, and to walk with me through all that pain. I mean, sometimes it's incredibly bad and I do need help. I don't need somebody to just sit with me. Like when after the birth of my first child, when I was very actively suicidal, and that's where Paul stepped in and in his way suggested like, yeah, I think like you might need more help than I can give you right now without also forcing the issue. So yeah, I think that has been really, really important to me to be able to have that person I can trust. Like even when things are really bad, I know he's not going to infantilize me, pathologize me, try to have me committed, or any of that stuff that a lot of people fear when they start talking about their mental health publicly. And that's actually something that has happened in our past, is that I've had punitive things happen to me for speaking about my mental health. And he's not that person. And so that's really good to have that safe person, I think.
Paul, would you weigh in on what it's been like from your perspective being with somebody who's open about what they're struggling with mental health wise and what it's been like trying to support Michelle and how effectively you feel like you've done that in the context of your relationship?
Well, it can be challenging because, well, my profession is I am an engineer, so therefore I am by definition a problem solver. So when she has an issue, a problem, I would like to resolve it quickly and move on and let's get to the next thing because this issue is weighing you down and stopping you. Let's resolve it, move on. And I think that's probably an instinct that a lot of people have because it's unpleasant to sit with discomfort, but sometimes that's just what needs to be done is to sit with the discomfort, poke at it, know its shape and understand it rather than package it up in a box and put it somewhere else. So that is not a one size fits all answer to that because it's hard to know the difference between a solvable problem and a feeling you have to sit with. And that's something I've had to learn to distinguish throughout my relationship with Michelle. So it's having patience is key. And I think Michelle has over the years, quite a number of times thanked me for how patient I am because I don't know. I mean, I can take a lot of abuse in the quoted way, not actual getting, you know, abused, but you know, I'm a Timex watch, we'll say. Take a licking and keep on ticking. And
that's not sounding good.
Well, whatever. That's what it is. I can be tossed around. It's hard when you are going through these feelings and it's hard on me too, but you know, I'm patient and stick with it and am optimistic that it'll work out because, you know, I mean, I think Michelle would agree with me. She's not necessarily an optimistic person, but I am. And I think that might be one of the reasons that we fit together is I do tend to look at on the sunnier side of things. I expect things to turn out all right. I'm the sunnier side of this relationship. And again, I don't think Michelle would necessarily disagree with me. And that is probably part of what makes things work.
One of the things that I want to make sure we give some space to, it's something that come up and, you know, maybe relates to some of the topic here and maybe in other ways doesn't relate. Michelle, I know this is a big question, but you've written a lot about the traumatizing effects of being adopted. Could you talk a bit about the ways, because this is a topic we really haven't gotten to explore on the show yet, like, could you talk a bit about the ways in which you think it affects your marriage and your life and how you handle it, especially, you know, because we might have some listeners who are adopted themselves and who don't get to hear that much from people like themselves kind of speaking openly about not just the positive, but also the negative sides of adoption.
Sure. Yeah, this is... You just open Pandora's box, and I know we don't have as much time as we could for this, but I'll try to maybe keep it brief. I mean, just speaking into the mental health stuff, generally, I think there's so many connections between adopted people and mental health problems. And until I had like connected those dots to see that a lot of my anger issues, my sort of like just frustration and anxiety and all this really like centers around this gap in my life, like this narrative I didn't know that mattered to me until I had kids. When I started having kids, that's when it became really obvious to me that I didn't have anything to tell them about their background or anything, you know. So that it kind of like having that understanding that so many of my mental health struggles likely stem from being relinquished and then adopted, that helps actually. I'm sure it was hard on Paul, especially before I could figure all that out. I think ever since I've kind of had that framework, things have gotten markedly better for me in a lot of ways. But, you know, just being adopted generally in a family, it's hard because you have like, then what people don't think about are like the residual effects of kind of unpacking your story and interrogating your narrative, like finding biological family in the middle of having a, you know, a family that you've already started of your own with a newborn sitting there, and suddenly I've found my father and his picture for the first time ever. And like the 2 weeks that followed that were just completely like, I couldn't function. I was just walking around like bursting into tears for no reason. And I was shaking, and it's like this weird sort of like my body was remembering things that I had never known, but had known at the same time. And so it takes away time from my family to be adopted. In other words, it's like another way that adoption kind of has robbed me of things, because now, right now I'm on the precipice of trying to kind of like reconnect with my biological mom. And I have put that off specifically because I'm in the middle of 1,000 other things right now. And I know that that's going to kind of cause another upheaval in my mental health. So it's like, you have to kind of, if you're in a partnership with an adoptee, or if you're an adoptee in a partnership, like, it's good to kind of have that self-awareness to know that some of these events that unfold really just take their toll on your family life. You know, my kids have witnessed me just on the floor in tears, like, you know, acting like a big baby myself, but it's just, there I am, like, this is, you know, my dad died. I don't have to tell you, he died, and I had just met him. Like, you know, this is the thing that happened. So it's just complex, I guess I should say. Everybody has these tragedies that happen in life as you go through losing people that you love. But I think in adoption, there's just so much loss that starts the whole thing off. And then to have the kind of compound losses that occur after reunion and things like that, it's just, it's a lot. And for these little kids that are 4 and 7 years old in my life, like, they don't understand any of it, and I have to kind of walk them through it too. So it's a lot.
I think something really helpful that you said there is understanding that some of what you are feeling, some of the emotions you are dealing with, you could understand them so much clearer in the context of, oh, these are things that commonly happen to adoptees, things that adoptees go through, and knowing the framework of how some of your emotions related to the fact of having been adopted really helped you make sense of those feelings some more, feel less blowing in the wind with them, even though the feelings are still there, are still complex, are still painful. Having that framework was really helpful. And I think that's a great insight to share with our listeners. Now, also, you already highlighted some of the parts about being an adoptee that can just be difficult, and how it will differ from person to person in their own journeys through life. But for you, it sounds like you became aware of who your biological father and mother were. This was after you were married. Is that right? And so prior, did you also, so in the earlier days of you guys' relationships, prior to marriage, were there ways that you found, Michelle, that reckoning with different struggles you had as an adoptee impacted your relationship in any kinds of ways, even prior to marriage or kids?
Well, just to clarify, I had actually met my biological mom when I was 17 at a very brief encounter, because I wanted to. I was very curious as a kid, and it was like just a happenstance that she was able to be located by the agency. But I kind of, once I did that, I buried that and just like didn't want to talk to her anymore. And so we just lost touch. And by the time I met Paul, I was in this, what some of us call this fog, where I just was like, I love being adopted. It's fine. I'm happy. It's cool. So I wasn't thinking critically about it at all when I met Paul, and said some of the standard things that many like otherwise happy adoptees will say, like, I'm happy I was adopted. I'm grateful and whatever, lucky. So there's that. But as far as like whether stuff was impacting me, I mean, I'm sure it was, but it's hard to quantify this, you know, as like an empirical kind of thing. There's no way to know for sure how much of it was just kind of me as a person and all the other things that have happened to me in my life, and how much of it was adoption. But I could say one thing that sticks out for me is like, I've always struggled with eating with body issues, like being diagnosed at many different points in my life with anorexia. And when I met Paul, I was really, really insecure about my body. It was not a good time for me. And things have changed so much because I've just become this like really kind of badass triathlete, and I'm happy to be in the shape that I'm in. But when I met him, I had a really bad relationship with food. And that's a really common thing that adopted people struggle with, apparently. So I wish I had known that earlier. You know, I think I could have probably figured out how to change my relationship with food and with exercise for the better much sooner in life. Because that's something I know I didn't start to really do till I figured out how much it had to do with adoption, you know? So it was like this moment where I suddenly like shed all of that and said, no, I'm just going to embrace this athletic part of me and not worry so much about how much I weigh and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. It sounds like like this example of how having the framework of, hey, here are some common problems or issues that come up amongst adoptees helped you to understand what you've been going through in a more helpful and predictable framework. And then in addition to that, and you also caution that, you know, everyone's story is different, that also people can at a certain point in their life just, or maybe always, be like, you know, I'm happy it worked out the way it did. I had a positive experience after being adopted. This doesn't have to factor into so much of what you understand about me. For others, it factors in more. But I would say it sounds like you also had a real asset in that Paul is an emotionally intelligent partner and was able to support you meaningfully through the ups and downs of your journey with figuring out what elements of adoption impact your mental health and continue to, as you said, as different waves come of the loss of your biological father, of considering reconnecting with your mother, having a partner who's there for you in the ways that Paul has evidenced throughout this conversation that he is capable of being, surely has been a huge asset. You guys sound like a really well-matched couple, and I think I understand what you meant, Paul, about, man, there's something about her that just elevates what a relationship could be. And I think we were able to see that and hear that on this chat today.
Yes, thank you so much to both of you. I feel like, Michelle, I feel like I've learned so much from you over the years, but we also learned a lot today. And I think it's going to be really great for our listeners to see that a relationship can be really good, even if there's a lot of complexity that goes into it and complicated careers and mental health and moving locations and just dealing with all the things that people have been dealing with these last few years. So I think it's a wonderful story of hope, actually, for a lot of people out there. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoy this podcast, please rate it 5 stars so that others have a chance to listen to it as well. And make sure to subscribe so that you can get our future episodes. All our platforms are accessible at strangersoninternet.com. Again, that's strangersoninternet.com. There's no the in there. You can become a part of our community by joining the Strangers on the Internet Facebook group or following us at Swipe Strangers on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, or Mastodon, where we are on the Faustodon server with 2 S's. We also appreciate support to defray our costs to run the podcast. You can help us out at Swipe Strangers on ko-fi.com, which is ko-fi.com. I would like to thank my husband, Carlos Farini, for sound editing, as well as Vlad Kuyuzhuklu for permission to use his music for this podcast. Bye, everyone.
Bye.